It's red.
Okay. Well, good afternoon. We have a lot to pray about, a lot of people in need. I noticed my wife wanted me to mention that there's some books in the back for anybody that wants them. I noticed most of them are already gone, but there's still a couple back there if you're interested. Some that we had gone through, some of my dad's things that we hadn't gone through for years, and finally did. And books that I had other copies of. Wanted to update you on my trip to Thailand a little bit. I am busy rewriting some of the messages I need to give because they will need to be translated by, the translation will not be as easy, I think, as it, for me and for everybody else as it was when I was there before. The translator is not as talented. She's good, but she's not. It won't be as easy as it was before. So I need to rewrite some things and get the Americanisms out, get the expressions out, get the difficult words out. And I don't know what the difficult words are. And being American, I don't know what the Americanisms are. So it's a guessing game. And I just simple thing like I was writing one thing I wrote that it wouldn't make sense if Jesus would have done this. Or maybe I wrote it as a question. Doesn't make sense. I'm thinking, makes sense. Will that translate into Burmese? Maybe not. Probably not. Makes sense. I don't know. I just think about things like that and try to have very basic sentences that say the same thing so that they're easily translatable. Because it doesn't matter how good you think your message is if you're speaking to people that are listening to a translator in Burmese. If that translator doesn't get it right, you haven't accomplished anything. So it's a challenge for me for the next few weeks to do that. So if I talk differently, it's because I'm already thinking about how to translate into Burmese. I did get an email asking about I heard that you had all that the board had decided to donate some money to help fund the festival in Burma, and Leon and Gloria, thank you for that. And that money will go for their trip and the expenses of getting the Burmese people to wherever that central place is. And also to help pay for their food and lodging and so forth. I also told Leon that I wanted to help the. I was hoping that we could do something special for the refugees and those that are in Thailand. So I told him I would try to drum up some donations and bring a little bit of extra money with me so that we could have some special food. Of course, they're going to have rice and certain things with every meal, but sometimes I think, at least when I was there, meat was a commodity that wasn't there too often, or if it was there, it had lots and lots of bones in it, and sometimes I didn't even take it wasn't worth the trouble for me to pick through the bones to get the meat. So if you are interested in helping out, you can just see me or send a donation to Apple Ridge Ministries at my place or whatever, and I'm going to take some money over of our own, and if anybody wants to help with that, I'll just have some cash so that we can tell the people that work with the food there regularly at Legacy that they can they have a little bit of extra money and they can do something special during the festival. Okay. You already been recording me? Oh, okay. Let's, as some of you know, those that were here last time, you know that I'm working on a series. This will be part two. I call it The Big Picture, What We Believe. So this will be The Big Picture, What We Believe, Part 2. And the method to my madness here is that by looking at how other people believe, it helps us to get a better picture of what we believe and how it is different, and in some cases unique or special or whatever. And I think especially today, I hope to show that certain things that you and I believe and maybe take for granted are very, very special. At least they're special to me. Just to review where we were, I drew a big circle, divided it up, and 33% of the world is Christian. And the other 67% believe something else, or nothing. And so the idea is to figure out just what it is they believe and show how the differences between us and them. Also, eventually, next sermon, and maybe a sermon after that, I will talk more about how Christians differ among themselves about what we believe, as we actually had a discussion there after the scripture reading. About one of the ideas. We talked last time and came up with ideas about how the ancient religious worldview focusing particularly on Mesopotamia because that is where Abraham was, or Abram was, when God called him, his family out. So we focused on Mesopotamia, but some of the similar ideas apply to other parts of the world, including Egypt. Egypt was much more organized, though, in their religion. What were the perceptions, what were the understandings and the worldviews that God had to correct, that Yahweh, when he revealed himself to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, to Moses, and so forth, and the Israelites? What were the common understandings of what a God should be, or is, or was, that he had to correct? And there were quite a few that we wrote up on the board. That one of the big ones that you pointed out is that the gods of the ancient world were limited. They were limited. They were anthropomorphic. They were like humans. They fought among themselves. They could get drunk. They squabbled. They were local in where they had power. They didn't have power throughout. Of course, God is different than that. He called Abram from up in Ur of the Chaldees and said, "Move to Israel. Move to the land of Palestine, Canaan." That's a long way to move, and he was God in both places. That's a different concept than what was typical. The gods of the people were representable. You could make a representation of some sort, whether it's a statue or a picture or something that represented them. God was not that way. We didn't talk about it, but you know, and we talked about it before one time, that in the temple, when it came time to build a temple, they had the cherubim in there, right? And they had the Ark of the Covenant and all this, and there was no God there. There was no thing that you look at. I forget who it was. Somebody that's better on history than me. Was it Alexander, or was somebody? Who was it that visited the temple and walked into the Holy of Holies and saw there was no idol and couldn't figure it out? Like, where's the God? Does anybody remember who that was? I don't remember. But you know, that was very unusual. You got all, you know, it's all, everybody's all dressed up here in the Holy of Holies, and there's no God, because Israel's God, Yahweh, was not to be represented in any kind of way, because you can't do him justice by trying to represent him. God, as opposed to being limited and anthropomorphic, we talked about how all the omnis apply to God, right? Omniscience, he knows everything. The omnipresence, he can be everywhere. Omnipotence, he's all powerful. One that we didn't mention, and I didn't know the word, but I looked it up. Omnificence. Anybody know what omnificence is? I didn't know. He has all creative power. It has to do with creative power. Omnivorous. I'm just seeing if you're awake there. He's transcendent. Can't be represented. Everybody got the omnivorous part, right? You eat bears eat animal and vegetable. So do we. God can eat whatever he wants, but he's not. That's not one of the omnis. Of course, we learned that there were many gods. That was typical of ancient religions, to have many gods, very pluralistic worship. Didn't matter if you have your God, that's fine. You have your God, I have my God, we all have our God, no big deal. And so they were very accepting of other gods. Also involved some ancestor worship we talked about. Now, certain things were similar. They appealed to God for help in decisions. They counted on their gods for blessings. They sacrificed to their gods. They explained the unexplainable by looking to their gods. These are all things that the Israelites did as well. In the ancient belief system, the gods were kind of doing their own thing. There wasn't that much involvement between the gods and the humans, right? The humans are kind of on their own. They're kind of around to help and to honor the gods and to make the gods feel good. There really was no bridging that divide between man and the gods, because the gods were basically interested in themselves. When we talked about the religion of God, though, it was different. Yahweh's religion involved what scholarly terms is called soteriology. There's a doctrine of salvation. There's a future. There's something to look forward to. This wasn't part of the ancient religions. They were just interested in the day-to-day, for the most part. And Egyptian religion did believe in some kind of an afterlife, obviously, because they were very involved with how they buried and so forth, and we could tell that. But for the most part, they weren't involved. They didn't see that gods, their God or other gods, were personal and could that they could interact with them in some kind of a meaningful way, or that those gods were even concerned for them. But with Yahweh, when he revealed himself to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Moses to Israel and so on down the line, he repeatedly makes it clear that he's interested in them as individuals, as people, and that he has a plan for them and a future. And in fact, as we mentioned, the whole book is about his plan and how he's going to redeem man from his sinful condition. So that's very different from the ancient worldview. And the whole idea of salvation and reconciliation is very different from the ancient worldview. And I also commented that salvation is by faith and grace. And we'll talk a little bit more about that today as well. Today, what I'd like to do is move on to some organized religion. In fact, talk about what is basically, at least for a major religion, the oldest major organized religion on earth, and that's Hinduism. Also going to talk just a little bit about Buddhism because it's related. Why talk about Hinduism? Well, 14% of Earth's inhabitants are Hindu. That's about 950 million of them, right? That's a lot of people. Again, we talk about in the world tomorrow, you're going to be involved in helping and teaching. It's good to know what the rest of the world believes, I think. We'll just kind of touch on it briefly and at least understand how what we believe is different. Hinduism is the third largest religion in the world. It's primarily in India, in Nepal some, in some parts of Sri Lanka, but primarily India and places where people that are from India live now, like in the United States. We have a lot of Hindus in the United States because we have a lot of Indians in the United States, from people that have moved here from India. There was a time when the whole Indian subcontinent was Hindu, but the Muslims made inroads there and controlled the area for many, many years in the Middle Ages, and because of that, there, you know, you have a lot of a Muslim influence in Pakistan and in different places. We'll talk about that later. Are not Hindu anymore, at least predominantly. Buddhism is about 6% of the earth is Buddhist. Could be a lot more because Buddhism, as we'll talk about just briefly, is kind of a philosophy as much as it is a religion. And there were people that would tell you there's as many as a billion people that are Buddhists. If you count all these people in China that don't have maybe an organized religion but have a certain philosophy, and there's different ways to count it. But in terms of people who would say they're Buddhists, that's about 6% or 350 million or more. So between Hinduism and Buddhism, we got about a fifth of the world's people. About a fifth, 1.3 billion or more, perhaps a lot more. When I talk about any organized religion, it's going to be obvious to you, and I just want to make this disclaimer up front, it's going to be obvious that I have to speak in generalizations. We don't have time to go through all the details, and if I say Hindus tend to do this or tend to believe this, obviously it's not true of all 950 million of them. Okay, and there are, because there's different sects and groups even among the Hindus that believe different things. So don't think that, you know, what I'm saying is got this carte blanche. This applies to all 950 million. It doesn't. Okay, but we need to get an idea. So I'll do that. But don't think it applies that anything that I say is going to apply to a billion and a half people, perhaps between Hindus and Buddhists. Let's talk about Hinduism just a little bit. And the reason, I don't think you need to know a whole lot about Hinduism. I don't think I do, but in order to understand how it's different and what you have and how special it is, it will, I think, be enlightening. That wasn't meant to be a pun, we'll find out. But anyway, it will be enlightening to find out a little bit about Hinduism and Buddhism. Hinduism, as I said, is supposed to be one of the world's oldest or maybe the oldest organized religion in the world. It is unique as much for what it doesn't have as what it does have. Does anybody know anything about Hinduism that knows anything about what Hindus do not have or what Hinduism as a religion does not have? Any guesses?
A real God.
They, huh?
A real God that hears you and answers your prayer.
Well, in a way, yeah. They don't have, the way a scholar would put it, is they do not have a single concept of deity. They don't all agree on the same thing about what God is or what God could be or what gods are. So you're right. They don't have that. Anything else? Oh, they do. They do have days that they worship. I don't know if they're called holy days or how, but they do have their own days. They don't have a founder. Most religions have somebody that you point to. That was our first guy. Even the Jews would say Abraham, you know, whether he founded it or not. You know, the people point to somebody. Hindus don't point to anybody. You can't point to anybody. There's no body historically that they know that was the first Hindu or came up with a Hindu idea. They don't have a specific system. You can't have a list of Hindu beliefs that are expected. And in a sense, Hinduism is a philosophy, and it's very personal. It's very personal, and that could be a good thing. I mean, our religion should be personal, not corporate, but with Hinduism, it's definitely that way. There's no single system of morality. There's no one list of things that are right or wrong. There's no central religious authority. You can't go to the shrine, you know, where here's where all the rules come from. They don't have that. Never have. They don't have a concept of a prophet. Which I didn't realize. I wouldn't have thought of that at all. But that was something I read. Now, why pick Hinduism first? One, because it's the oldest. But two, because it seems to me, when I went and read about the different religions and the little bit of experience I have in Asia with Buddhists, that it seemed like if you go through ancient religions like we talked about last time, that this is just a natural next step. As you'll see, this follows from some of the ancient beliefs, and in some cases is exactly the same. Some cases not very different, and still not terribly organized and structured, because it is very, very personal. You read, if you want to read any apologetic type things about Hinduism, they'll talk about how the people embrace their beliefs, but it's a very personal thing. It's inward. It has to do with how they live as much as what they believe. That's actually a good thing, isn't it? At least we would claim it is. And it's something that we think about as well. How old is it? People discuss it, but at least 1800 BC. At least almost 4,000 years old. In some ways, because it follows naturally from what the native religions were, like we talked about last time, it could be as much as 3,000 or 4,000 years before Christ. I mean, it could go all the way back. Whenever people settled in India, that system started forming. It's just the way it worked. But there's no hard evidence of a uniform is even the wrong word because they don't all believe the same thing. But there's no evidence of a widespread belief system like that until about 1800 BC. How about gods or God? What do they have? I guess I'll start writing some things. Let's see. Anybody know anything about Hindu gods? That's true. And what I want to do first is talk about what they had before they had a trinity, because the oldest, apparently, anyway, the oldest beliefs were about this kind of a, it's hard to call it a character or a person or a being. I left something out, didn't I? Ramen. Oh, spelled it wrong. There's an H in there, I think. Sorry. Ramen. That's not really God. That's kind of like the power of God. Of course, we're using words here that have meaning. God, to us, has a meaning, right? It doesn't have the same meaning to a Hindu. So we have to be careful even in our terminology. When Brahman is the power of God, that's distinct, different than something called, I'm going to spell these things right, the Atman, which is, let's call it the universal spirit. That's one way of putting it. Now, this will matter in a little bit. the oldest texts and things that we have access to kind of talk about the supernatural realm, if you want to call it like that, in terms of Brahman and Atman. I don't know if I'm even pronouncing those things right. I apologize. I did not take the time to learn how to... Brahman and Atman. But, as Jim says, in a newer sense, or in more recent times, there's another way of looking at it. These two together, add them together, okay? They are what we might call absolute reality. I told you this is a philosophy, right? Reality consists of Brahman and Atman, power of God and this universal spirit. Later on, the Trinity idea comes when the concept of Brahman was broken down into three aspects. You have the Brahma, I don't know that this is important, but we'll just put them down. You have Vishnu, and you have Shiva. All right? The Brahma is the omniscient, the all-knowing, the kind of unfathomable, the thing you kind of can't put your finger on, the self-existent, the ground of the world. It's the pure consciousness. Sounds like a lot of philosophy. It's, I would say one thing that's very clear to me anyway is that this is impersonal. It's kind of like everything. All right? And that's why, to me, it's connected with what we talked about before. You have this very impersonal force. Okay? And then you got Vishnu, who's the sustainer. Supposed to be the sustainer of the world. This Vishnu can and is seen as one who can manifest himself in different ways to help people at different times. He can manifest himself as different personalities, if you want to call them that. Avatars. The term, when they manifest themselves, they're called avatars. You know that term? From video gaming or whatever it is? Avatar. Different forms that they can manifest themselves in. Now, Shiva. That's the destroyer. Also has some good sides, too. I don't really understand it. It kind of sounds like a devil character, but there are some positive characteristics, too. So I don't claim to understand all that, but this is, in a sense, the bad guy, too. This destroyer, but can also be compassionate. So how does that work? I don't know. I'm not sure. There are many, many, could be millions of lesser gods or avatars. All right? Many, 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 many quote-unquote gods. They're not really gods in the sense. Again, we're limited by our language. They're not gods with a capital G. All right? But they're part of the supernatural realm. All right. So here you got Brahman and Atman. The power of God, this universal spirit, combined together, they are the absolute reality. They're what's real. What might not be real? Okay, we'll get there. We're not real. This is real. Got to follow me here. I'd make a terrible Hindu teacher. But absolute reality is not what you see and what I see. And, you know, in a sense that, you know, there's some truth to that. We are temporary, but it gets more complicated than that. The other concept, one other concept that's very important, you've all heard of this. You know what it is. What's it called when you're bad and it comes back on you? Karma. You could also be good and it come back on you. You don't normally talk about good karma. Karma. All right? This is where you get your just reward, whatever it is. Can be good or bad, right? It is It's a feature, a part of the universe. Let me see if I can get a better word. It's part of the fabric of the universe. Like what? Give me another thing that might be a fabric, part of the fabric of the universe. An example. Gravity? it's a law. It's part of... gravity is a characteristic or something that belongs to everything that has mass in the universe. It seems to be a fabric of the universe. It's bent, you know, around that. There's all kinds of things that go on. So it's part of the universe. I'll just use gravity as an example. Not only is it because it's like that, it is unalterable. It's absolute, you might say. I'm writing this up here because it's going to be important later. You get a test. No test. It's unalterable. Here's another way it was worded. Cannot be thwarted. Just like you can't thwart gravity, you cannot thwart karma. It's gonna get you. All right? Karma's important. So, if you got the absolute reality is this Brahman and Atman, then what are you and I? What is man? Man is, I've got to quote this, the imperishable soul, or Atman, which is part of the Brahman-Atman reality and is eternal. So, you don't really exist, in a way. I don't really exist. This is what exists. And somehow or another, this universal spirit animates you and animates me from, you know, and animates whoever comes after. There's a soul. The concept of soul was different. I'm not going to spend forever on this. I'm just giving you some background so we can get into something that's more meaningful. The soul was different in Hinduism than it is in Buddhism. We'll see this. In Hinduism, the soul was definitely a thing. In Buddhism, it's more of not really a thing. So we'll get there. Just keep with me on this. What is sin? I'm not going to write it down. There are two words, avidya and namaya. The avidya is ignorance concerning the reality. It's not understanding this. That's one sin. Catherine's shaking her head back there. You know all this. You had to learn?
I haven't.
Oh, okay. All right. If you shake your head no, just let me know. But sin is not understanding the absolute reality. That's one form of sin. The other sin is having the illusion that we're real. Mike's laughing. I'm trying to be serious here. Those are the two sins. It's not understanding this and thinking that you're real, which to me is kind of two sides of the same coin.
Give me the first definition of sinning.
Huh?
Say the first definition of sinning. First one. Not knowing
Ignorance concerning reality. I might not have read it like that. Ignorance concerning reality, this is the reality. So the one sin is not understanding that. The other sin is not recognizing that you're not even real.
Well, then the reason I'm laughing is because I'm just a big sinner because I understand nothing important.
Okay, well, we'll have a salute. We'll show you what will happen because of that. Because sin comes from a lack of understanding these things of self, yourself, and the cosmos, the whole. Really, it's not understanding these two things. That's your sin. The only way to escape that is to start understanding, right? So Hinduism and Buddhism is a lifelong process of trying to understand. This is more Hinduism than Buddhism. Yes.
Sounds kind of like
Gnosticism. Yeah, I was going to get there. Yes, absolutely. This is very similar to Gnosticism. So it's really nice that, you know, we're reading what Sue read today, because it ties right in there. That it's a certain level of understanding that you have to reach in order to be saved. Wrong word, not saved. That's my word. That's a Christian word. It's not their word. We'll explain that in a minute. But just for our terms, to get to wherever you're going, you got to understand. And that's very Gnostic. The whole word Gnostic, and Hughes talked about this before, has to do with having this level of knowledge that puts you one step above everybody else and lets you understand what you need to understand in order to have access to the great beyond. You know? Yes, Sue?
Isn't that why they believe in reincarnation?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the next step. That's where. So what I was going to talk about, the next step is what is salvation then? Well, they don't really have salvation. But what they have, and I think this is worth writing down, they have something called, I bet you've heard of this too,
transmigration.
Now, some of this is very specifically Hindu. The Buddhists don't believe everything I'm saying here. We'll talk about a few differences in a minute. Transmigration of souls. Because the Hindus believe the soul is this real thing. It's part of the universal spirit. The Atman. And because, as Sue said, we don't get it right. Mike just said it. He doesn't understand it. Well, his soul's going to have to go through another round after he's gone. And if his karma's good, pretty good, but he just doesn't understand, he might come back as somebody like himself or better. If his karma's pretty bad, he might come back as a rat. Or a monkey. But he'll keep coming back until he gets it right.
Or whatever, were
Oh, is there? I do not know. Do you know, Catherine? For the tape, the question is there a certain number to start with? You know, is there 144,000 or whatever? Is there a certain number? Just a joke there. And then that's all. And, yes, Bonnie?
If they don't exist, do they have to pay taxes?
They have separation of church and state in India. Except in the 90s and 2000s, late 90s and 2000s, they got a kind of a religious government in there. And I don't know the answer to that now. They're a democracy, though, so they're as hopeless as we are, or worse than we are. We only have 300 million. They've got 900 million or a billion or whatever to try to decide everything. So, in theory, Sue, that makes sense to me. If you're going to continue to go through this process till you get it right, and your soul is something independent of who you are, it's just something that exists in the Atman, then how can there be more...